Good evening. I don't know why I smile so big when I see you guys, but it's like it is. Thank you. As I was saying, I don't know why I have this huge smile on my face when I sit in front of you and I see you. It's like, oh my, I don't know. My heart just automatically opens. But, you know, how we treat ourselves. I've never had a teaching of any kind that relied so much over getting this skill, obtaining or open to this compassion for ourselves. It's a prerequisite. Well, why? Well, because we're seeing some things about ourselves that we don't particularly want to see. And so we're very compassionate to others when they make mistakes, so they don't do it right. But it's very, very difficult for us. I remember years ago, 43 years ago, when the teachers came back from Asia to teach us. Of course, there were no books, no literature, anything. And they taught us as if we were monks, which was fine. It was strict and, you know, very monk-like. But it was most useful. But it didn't take our teachers long to realize that the Western mind, and I'm making this up, if you'd ask them, they'd say, she doesn't know what she's talking about. But it's like the Western mind is not like the Asian mind. And one of the distinctions is not one better than the other. They're just different. And the difference comes with our conditioning. And this unworthiness or not feeling good about ourselves or lacking the compassion is conditioned in us. And the Buddha says, quite simply, you can look the whole world over for someone who deserves the one's compassion, the compassion for yourself, and that person will not be found. So we need our self-compassion. We need for our healing, for our well-being, for the well-being of others, and for the well-beings of the planet. And so the work continues, and that's what's so wonderful about the meditation, because the compassion we naturally open to it. But we have to be reminded our loveliness that we've forgotten. And so over time we've created these images and dialogues within us as mind states that we've recorded over time that continues doubting ourselves over and over and over again. So it's important when we're reflective in meditation to remember that this is an important process. Most important. And I remember first hearing it thinking, Yeah, something about that doesn't sound right because of our tendency to be self-centered anyway. But no, it's not being self-centered, as you well know. It's an opening. It's an opening to and honoring our humanity, our gift of life. Because we're figuring out it's not us. So it's been given as just like it's going to be taken away. So how do we work with ourselves, about ourselves? Because this is a process that no one is excused. And our crazy minds, as we begin to even look closer as at our crazy minds, it's very important to understand the nature of the mind that creates these mind states. So how can we live life with such complications? And it seems like, as you well know, it's getting more and more complicated, or more and more other than what we are expecting from life. Why? Because we're here in the West conditioned to not struggle much at all in lots of areas. But now we're right back to feeling unsafe. At least I can speak for myself. Feeling unsafe in a time where I can't think of any other time in my life where I felt unsafe in my own country. And sometimes I even feel like the universe is piling it on. So the teachings say that with practice, we can begin to witness who we really are beyond all of these thoughts and beliefs. There's much, much more to us. But the question is, how do we open to it? If we do truly all have Buddha nature, then what is covering it? And that's exactly what we're doing here. This recurring self-body slams don't necessarily go away but when we start looking at them. And with that attitude of, okay, I'm going to look at them and get rid of them, doesn't work. Because along with all the things that we see about, in order for it to release us in all the ways the Buddha promised to release us, we have to be accepting. Acceptance. Oh, hello, dialogue. Come on, let me get to know you. Let me bring you in. They're already there within, but let me notice and let me get to know you. And how we relate to them will depend upon the effects they have on us. But we need to know them. And so Tara Brach says one of the great blocks to realizing the goal of who we are is our conviction that something is wrong with us. She says, when I teach about the trance of unworthiness, I'm often asked, why do we hold on so tightly to our belief in our own deficiency? Why are we so loyal to our suffering are addicted to our self-judgment. But it seems that we do long to accept and trust ourselves, trying to release these negative self-beliefs. And it is through those recognizing and allowing those beliefs that we become free with total acceptance. So we're trying to dig something buried very deep inside our bodies. And so they live not only these beliefs, not only in our minds, but a whole constellation of feelings and emotions that are embedded in our bodies. We feel it. We see it. We begin to open to it. And as a favorite saying goes, our issues are in our tissues. And they are deeply familiar. And they feel like me. Me, me, me. So most of our emotions are rooted in interpretations of reality that we have formed all through our lives. Until someone says, sit down and let's look at it. And we have relied on them for guidance and protection, we thought. Because what they tell us, who we are, and what we can expect from ourselves, from others, from the world. Our most negative self-beliefs arise, of course, from early experiences. What kind of experiences? Well, of fear and wounding. And due to a survival-driven negative bias, we remember these painful events much more readily than the pleasant ones. And we remember that critical comment more than something affirming. The dog bite, the slap in the face, the rude comment. Much more than the beautiful sunset or the joy we find in all aspects of our lives. So, Rick Hansen, a psychologist and a meditator, says the brain is Velcro for negative experiences, but Teflon for positive ones. And this fixation on what might be threatening is compounded by another tendency called confirmation bias. We want to be right about ourselves. And particularly, we look for, lead us to focus on information that matches our reinforcing our existing beliefs. Oh yeah, that's true. I know that's true. Particularly in the case of charged issues like our values as a person. It hurts. So we begin to make an airtight case for our belief, and we keep the feelings of deficiency alive in daily life through all our incessant inner dialogue. But guess what? We know how to get to know them. If we watch our thoughts, we may discover the judge in the background continually asking. We're asking ourselves, how am I doing? How am I doing now? And condemning the gap between some ideal standard and what really is. So we may also notice worry thoughts about how falling short is right around the corner. Oh, the other shoe's about to fall. And we don't want to be rejected for our flaws, but we are all perfectly imperfect. We are human beings. And to understand what a true human being can be is important. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're looking within. But as long as we continue our fear-based thinking, those just stay there. Carlos Castaneda says that we maintain our world with inner dialogue, and that our world will change as soon as we stop talking to ourselves. One of the first things I noticed about myself on a long retreat for days, I kept entertaining myself. I mean, I kept commenting on everything. And anytime I do that, I go to the mind. And so couldn't really be with what was around me or the present moment. So Tara says to start inquiring about yourself from yourself. And we know to do that. What am I believing about myself? Where do I feel like I'm falling short? Or where am I thinking I'm such a bad person? And why do we feel so unlovable? Well, because we don't understand the true nature of being a human being, which is being perfectly unperfect. We make mistakes. All of us do. Sometimes we pretend, we're so pretentious that we have everything together. It doesn't matter who you are. You know one human being well, and you've got your curriculum right there with you. Then you know all human beings. So we can work with these dialogues, with what we work with everything else. We can work with using the acronym RAIN. We can recognize the very first thing to do is recognizing what we're saying to ourselves. And then allowing it to run its course, to do what it does. And then with the practices that we've been taught, we'll start investigating. And through this process, we begin to find out. We start opening to the truth. So again, we have to get to know it. And those three steps, recognizing, allowing, and investigating, guides us to the end, nurtures its healing. So the one question, what am I believing about myself? And our practice supports our right effort of how we are treating ourselves. But again, just like all the other teachings that are out there, we have to remind ourselves. We have to be awake. We have to look for the things that we are, the suffering that we're creating for ourselves, that's optional. Doesn't have to be. So by gosh, love yourself. So remember, your loveliness. You are to be honored as a human being, to be loved and appreciated in all its aspects. And the big first step is accepting that, not pretending to be superhuman. We've got a lot of pretension out there. But now we have wisdom, lots of wisdom, because we're getting to know ourselves. Thank you for listening. So Randy will come.
I'm already here.
Randy's already here. And we'll open it up.